The NAFI board battles for credibility. NASA insiders leak another problem with the Ares 1. And Airbus celebrates a year of the A380. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, October 28, 2008. There's been a sudden break in the stalemate between Boeing and the International Association of Machinists. Arthur Rosenfeld, director of the U.S. Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service, announced late yesterday negotiators have reached a tentative agreement during talks overseen by federal mediators in the nation's capital. Details have not yet been released, but Boeing Commercial Airplanes CEO Scott Carson did issue a statement which made a vague reference to the major sticking point, outsourcing. Quote, "This is an outstanding offer that rewards employees for their contributions to our success while preserving our ability to compete," unquote. The company adds that the offer includes general wage increases every year, increases pension benefits, and freezes the employee contribution to healthcare premiums. The union is recommending its 27,000 striking workers approve the contract. Meanwhile, the Society of Professional Engineering Employees in Aerospace is set to start talks with Boeing reps today. Its 20,000 employees have a contract which expires December 1st, and union leaders had said the same outsourcing issues that produced the impasse for the machinists would also be a major issue for SPIA members. Check back frequently for updates at aero-news.net. A group of prominent flight instructors, upset with a political fight within the National Association of Flight Instructors, now has a name and a website. Take Back Our National Association of Flight Instructors Committee, or TBO-NAFI, counts a number of master instructors in several regional and national flight instructors of the year among its 30-plus members. The group is outraged over the planned dismissal of board members Joanne and Sandy Hill, who are credited with the creation and nurturing of the NAFI Master Instructor Program. The conflict has brought to light a long-standing but rarely discussed provision of the NAFI bylaws, which limits voting for new or replacement directors to existing directors with no role in the voting for members. The frustration over the current situation is intensified by the decision of the board to keep deliberations about the Hills secret, claiming that a discussion of personnel issues is not appropriate for public discussion. EAA President Tom Poberesny told both sides last week, quote, "Whether it's reality or perception, the fact is that a strong negative feeling exists, and the board must address it with actions that will serve NAFI, both short and long term. Action must turn a negative into a positive," unquote. There's much more detail available in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. We'll have TBO NAFI founder, master instructor, and 2006 National CFI of the Year Rich Stoll as my guest on today's Aero News special feature. And you can now follow the story direct from the source at TBO NAFI's new website, which is www.tbo-nafi.org. You know, I wonder, was that name a conscious choice? I mean, was the point that NAFI is due for an overhaul? NASA's Constellation program, which is a collection of technologies intended to replace the U.S. space shuttle as America's primary way into space, is up against a number of serious technical challenges. The Ares 1 rocket in particular has acknowledged problems with adequate lift capability and vibration. Now, the Orlando Sentinel is citing anonymous sources in reporting that a tendency by the solid fuel rocket to drift laterally immediately after ignition poses a risk of damage to or even a collision with the launch tower. The Sentinel says it reviewed more than 800 pages of NASA documents and interviewed more than a dozen engineers, technicians, and NASA officials involved with the project. Most would only speak anonymously, saying they feared retribution from NASA management. One contractor said of the Ares 1, quote, "I get the impression that things are quickly going from bad to worse to unrecoverable," unquote. NASA says it can address the latest problem by repositioning and redesigning the launch pad. But some internal sources say the real problem will be hitting timetables and budget benchmarks set for the Constellation program. On Saturday, Airbus celebrated the first anniversary of the A380 Super Jumbo's entry into service. That first A380 was delivered to Singapore Airlines on October 15, 2007. The aircraft entered service 10 days later with a special charity flight between Singapore and Sydney. Since then, Airbus has delivered A380s to Emirates and Qantas. A total of 9 aircraft have been delivered so far, 6 in operation with Singapore Airlines, 1 with Qantas, and 2 with Emirates. To date, more than 700,000 passengers have flown on the world's first full double-deck aircraft, which is now connecting four continents and flying on seven major international routes. Up next on ANN, NTSB says neither pilot in the crashed Lancair was instrument rated. Officials want to know why clothing was seen falling from another plane just before it crashed. And Southwest pilots re-elect their union president. You're listening to Aero News.
Okay. Right up front, let me say that Garmin does not give tax advice. We have lawyers who cringe at the very thought of suggesting there might be tax advantages to buying a new Garmin avionics system this year.
Did he say tax advantages?
Could that be construed as tax advice, either express or implied?
Yeah, like I said, lawyers. So I guess I won't be telling you that this year Congress is offering special bonus depreciation up to 50% in year one for qualified business equipment placed in service during 2008. Business equipment like, say, a new Garmin avionics stack. But you didn't hear that from me, right?
What did he just say?
Okay, better check with your tax consultant for guidance and your Garmin dealer for the installation. Garmin. Follow the leader.
See your tax advisor for guidance.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for October 28th. I'm Paul Platt. The National Transportation Safety Board has issued its probable cause report on the crash of a Lancair Super ES near Albany, Oregon, back in February. The owner of the plane was in the left seat, a pilot friend in the right. Neither was instrument rated, but the pilot in the right seat had reportedly filed an IFR flight plan. The intended route was from Salem to Klamath Falls, then on to Salt Lake City. The forecast was from marginal VFR to VFR in the morning, improving by late morning, but with airmets for icing, turbulence, and mountain obscuration. The plane collided with terrain just minutes after takeoff. Both pilots and a passenger died. After examining the Chelton avionics and interviewing witnesses, the board ruled the probable cause to be the pilot in command's failure to maintain aircraft control while in cruise flight. Contributing factors to the accident were inadequate planning and decision-making, icing conditions, and continued flight into known icing conditions. Get more details at aero-news.net. I'll be discussing this case with CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves in this coming Monday's Aero News special feature. The NTSB has also issued a preliminary report on another Lancair crash that's a lot more difficult to figure out. The board says the Lancair Legacy collided with terrain shortly after takeoff from the Parowan Airport in Utah on October 18th. 53-year-old William Phillips, an ATP-rated pilot, died, and his wife Janice suffered serious injury after a downwind takeoff, followed by extended flight at 400 to 500 feet above the ground, and apparently the jettisoning of clothing and other personal effects from the plane before the crash. A probable cause report may be as much as a year away. The preliminary report made no mention of an interview with the survivor. Southwest Airlines pilots re-elected Captain Carl Kowitzki last week for a second two-year term as president of the Southwest Airline Pilots Association. Kowitzki got 82% of the vote among almost 6,000 pilots. He's an Oklahoma native, a pilot at Southwest since July of 1983, and is currently based at Dallas Love Field. Kowitzki commented, quote, "Many of the initiatives that began during my first term, especially as we continue to negotiate a new contract with Southwest Airlines and work to address national safety and security issues, are not complete, and I'm looking forward to seeing these projects to their conclusion. Serving the most experienced pilot group at the nation's number one carrier of domestic passengers is an honor and privilege that I do not take lightly," unquote. SWAPA says those unresolved issues include foreign ownership and the U.S.-EU Open Skies Agreement. The union says Kowitzki's leadership was instrumental in helping to obtain the nation's first biometric crew identification demonstration project, which is now underway at Baltimore-Washington Thurgood Marshall International Airport. For the second time this month, passengers have overpowered a man attempting to hijack an airliner headed for Russia by claiming to have a bomb. TASS reports a Boeing 737, operated by Sky Express, was en route from the Black Sea resort of Sochi to Moscow with about 150 people on board, when a passenger began shouting, "Allahu Akbar," and threatened to blow up the plane unless it diverted to Vienna. The Associated Press reports other passengers subdued the man and no injuries were reported. The RIA Novosti news agency reported the man arrested is believed to have a history of mental illness. The incident came following a similar situation on October 15th, in which an inebriated man claiming to have a bomb attempted to hijack a Turkish Airlines flight, but was overpowered by passengers. That plane landed safely in St. Petersburg. Still ahead, Britain's royal family gets another helicopter pilot. Hopes of finding water on the moon have suffered a setback, and Gulfstream claims two new city pair speed records. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9922. Or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, October 28th. I'm Paul Plack. Britain's Prince Harry will continue a family tradition and try out to become a military helicopter pilot. CNN reports Harry will find out next month whether he's been accepted for training. In a family synonymous with tradition, Harry follows his older brother William, who earned his RAF wings in April, despite a widely reported incident in which he landed a Chinook helicopter on property owned by the family of his girlfriend, Kate Middleton. He went on to serve 10 weeks of a 14-month deployment in Afghanistan. That tour shortened after a website broke the news blackout instituted to avoid making him a high-profile target for terrorists. The boy's father, Prince Charles, and uncle, the Duke of York, have also been trained to fly military helicopters. The Shackleton crater near the moon's south pole is always shaded from the sun. Scientists have long thought that if there is water anywhere on the moon, that might be the place. Well, now photos recently taken by Japan's Kaguya Lunar Explorer satellite have led Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency scientists to conclude that there are no exposed ice deposits in the crater. Kaguya's terrain camera is a stereo optic camera with 10 meters resolution. It succeeded in photographing the inside of the crater, which was faintly lit by sunlight scattered from the upper inner wall near the rim. Analysis of the pictures revealed no conspicuous brightness indicative of a sheet of pure water ice. The news is disappointing. In 1994, the Clementine lunar orbiter gave indications some scientists interpreted to be water ice. 1998's Lunar Prospector mission detected the presence of hydrogen in the Shackleton crater. Japanese researchers say small amounts of ice could still be mixed with lunar soil, preventing it from showing up as a reflective area on the images they took. Gulfstream says its G550 recently established two city pair speed records between the United States and Mongolia. The business jet flew 3,813 nautical miles from Anchorage, Alaska to Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, in 7 hours and 57 minutes at an average cruise speed of 0.85 Mach, into headwinds of 14 knots. The G550 then flew 5,868 nautical miles from Ulaanbaatar to San Diego, averaging a speed of 0.82 Mach with an average headwind of 5 knots. That flight lasted 12 hours, 34 minutes. And the G550 did it with the equivalent of one hand tied behind its back. The Russian air system routed the flights about 500 nautical miles longer than the Great Circle route. The plane also had to fly at a less-than-optimum altitude of 39,700 feet for the first 7 hours of the flight from Ulaanbaatar to San Diego. The G550 has set nearly 40 city pair records since entering service in September of 2003. The National Aeronautic Association has certified both recent flights as U.S. records. World record status is pending. And finally, the ceremony surrounding this Friday's closure of historic Tempelhof Airport in Berlin is recalling not only the airport's rich history, but the golden age of aviation itself. AFP News reports that for about $242 US, quote, Private operator Air Service Berlin puts on a period show for its guests. Passengers are greeted with a glass of sparkling wine by staff in crisp 1940s uniforms in the original officer's lounge where the airlift pilots took short breaks between delivery flights. Swing music plays as guests are ushered into a small cinema for a moving short film about the airlift featuring interviews with its pilots, unquote. Passengers then get a half-hour aerial tour of Berlin's landmarks aboard a vintage Douglas DC-3. Germany's Federal Administrative Court ruled Tempelhof needed to be closed to accommodate the new Berlin-Brandenburg International, due to open in 2011 on the outskirts of the city. Tempelhof opened in 1926, and one part will be preserved. An enormous crescent-shaped terminal building is a national monument. AFP reports proposals for the property's future use include a biotech park, film studios, a green residential development, and a giant solar energy center. You know, I understand why Tempelhof is going away, and I certainly understand why airlines no longer fly DC-3s. But would it really cost that much to have a touch of class back in airline travel? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Robert Buckman, whose job it is to predict the future of the airline industry. He'll explain why he believes customers will one day view the unbundling of airline services into separate fees as a positive. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.